There should not be two standards of justice in this nation, critics note. A slap on the wrist for the politically correct who do wrong versus conservative lawbreakers, even alleged lawbreakers. How can this nation continue to have two standards of law and order? We're going to discuss this right now with law professor John Eidsmo. He's also a prolific author. He wrote the book Christianity and the Constitution and the award-winning series of books called Historical and Theological Foundations of Law. His website is morallaw.org. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And John Eidsmo, it's so great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, Jerry. You and I have been friends and compatriots for 30-plus years, and just glad to see the way you're getting the word out.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So when it comes to the whole idea of double standards, there's certainly some biblical admonitions. Let's begin with the Bible. What does the Bible say about the idea of justice, you know, being applied towards this person one way, but this other person of a different political persuasion being applied a different way? In other words, two standards of justice.
Well, Exodus is very clear on that. There is not to be one standard for the rich or for the poor, not to be one standard for the person who lives here versus the sojourner in the gates. There is to be one law that applies to all. The judges are to dispense equal justice. They're not to accept bribes and so on. They're to decide cases on the law and on the facts. And that's very clear from the Bible, and that's an ideal that we have been striving for, although not always reaching fully here in America.
Okay, what did the founders have to say, along those same lines in terms of American law? I mean, for example, I know John Adams was very, very strong on the rule of law. In fact, John Adams took the popular, as an attorney, took the unpopular stance of defending the accused British soldiers who were involved in the Boston Massacre in, 1770? But anyway, he defended them because of the rule of law. He was a big man, you know, for the rule of law. So the founders and double standards of justice.
Exactly. And John Adams, as he said, their facts are stubborn things. And the plain fact is, these British soldiers, well, we don't support their cause. They were firing in self-defense against a mob that was threatening them. And he managed to persuade what was probably a hostile jury that he was correct. In fact, even his cousin Sam Adams, who at first was critical of John for taking that case, Sam Adams conceded that John was right, that the rule of law does need to prevail. Thomas Jefferson, if you look to the Declaration of Independence, there he makes the point of equality, that all are created equal, not that we're supposed to be equal in outcome, but that all are equal in the sight of God, and all are equal under the law.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Whether you agree with them or disagree with them, the January 6th people who went into the Capitol and they disrupted things, they did not follow, some of them did not follow what President Trump himself admonished them, go down there and peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard and so forth. But some of them broke windows and violated laws. But here's the thing. Aren't some of them being held without even being accused? Are the Bill of Rights being applied to them? Are they in any way political prisoners? I'd like to hear your comments.
In my opinion, definitely not. And my hope is that after this November, and when we have a new Congress, there will be an investigation into this, not the sham investigation that has obscured the truth and refuse to go after the real issues like it's been going on right now. But there are some real questions here. Yes, some of them seem to have violated the law. They may have been instigated by others outside of the Trump movement to do so. There are questions about why were policemen possibly inviting people to come in? Why were barricades being removed and so on? The January 6th committee isn't interested in those questions, but I am, and I hope those will be investigated. Nevertheless, I think we have to remember an admonition in Exodus as well, thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil. Mm. You can't let yourself get taken up with the emotion of the occasion and do something that results in a violation of law. Nevertheless, I'd have to say some of them, if they honestly believed that they were legally being allowed or even invited to enter, they may have a defense to criminal trespass charges.
Oh, I see. That's an interesting point. You use the phrase sham investigation. I mean, for example, what Liz Cheney and Adam Kissinger are involved in, what's strange about that is that they're having certain witnesses and guests testify to things, but there's no any kind of, you know, counter arguments, you know, being used. So in other words, it's all one-sided, to put it bluntly.
Very much one-sided. In fact, originally Republicans on the committee who would want to have this be an impartial investigation were kicked off the committee. The only Republicans on the committee right now, like Liz Cheney, are those who have been very vocal in their anti-Trump sentiments. So this is a sham investigation. But you are correct. There are some people there who are being incarcerated wrongly. And now some of the demonstrators have been allowed out on bail, and some of them have they've been given fairly lenient terms and so on. But there are others there that they have made a determination that these people are a flight risk or a risk to the public, and without giving us any basis for coming to that conclusion. As a result, they're being held without bail for now approximately a year and a half. They're being held in solitary confinement, and not just solitary confinement, but conditions that are in many ways substandard. And anyway, this, I think, is a gross miscarriage of justice, especially when you compare it to how things have been done in other parts of the country.
Are they, is there any kind of constitutional provision that they're, you know, is being applied against them? In other words, they're not, let's say, being able to face their accuser, their charge hasn't even been brought up. I mean, some of it just seems a little bit, you know, over the top, the way they're dealing with some of these J6 lawbreakers. And by the way, we should say, you know, nobody should go into the, you know, people's house and do those kinds of things that we saw on January 6th.
Well, you're correct on all accounts on that. But yes, this is a double standard, a miscarriage of justice. And what's going on here? First of all, I think we have to remember that the framers did design a federal system in which we have power shared between the federal government, other powers reserved to the states. And that being the case, rather than having one uniform standard that all courts in the country are going to follow, courts in D.C. are not necessarily going to decide cases in the same way as courts in Massachusetts or courts in Texas. But on the other hand, we do have certain principles, like we cannot have excessive bail, we cannot have denial of bail unfairly, cruel and unusual punishment. Other standards like this that we find in the Eighth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, the Fifth and the Fourth Amendments, these do apply nationwide, but you have to remember that part of what's going on here is in District of Columbia, you are going to have overwhelmingly left-wing judges and probably very anti-Trump juries as well. And as far as getting some of this rectified, probably the only way to get it rectified is to get it up to the United States Supreme Court, where finally they'll have a system of justice where you'll have some judges that will look at things fairly.
Is Trump finished because of January 6th?
I'm not sure. This is going to, it's going to hurt, but again, we've got, I think we need to find out what happens in November, not just as to a Republican comeback in November, but also the candidates that Trump has endorsed, and whether the Trump revolution is far from being finished. That's going full steam. Whether it's going to proceed best with Trump at the helm, or whether Trump would be better, rather than being a king maker, and having somebody who shares his principles and values, possibly DeSantos, but maybe doesn't have his baggage, whether the standard bearer for 2024 might be Trump or might be somebody else, I don't think we're ready to say yet. I'm not ready to say yet. I'm not sure which I think at this point.
Well, one thing that's been disillusioning in the last few years, for example, Bob Knight, the veteran journalist, strong conservative Christian and so forth, we've had him on the program many times. He said this in an interview about the FBI, and this was in 2018, and he was talking about things, for example, where Trump was accused of Russian collusion, and after a while it became so clear that that was not correct. But here's what Knight said. I don't recall any time in American history where the FBI was used as a blunt political instrument. There's a pattern of corruption here that's far and deep, and Americans are wondering if anybody's ever going to be punished for it. End quote. And then jump ahead to 2021, and we saw examples where the Department of Justice was actually accusing concerned parents of being quote-unquote domestic terrorists because they were concerned about some of the terrible things being taught in their schools, or their children even being molested in schools by an openly transgender student. So, again, it's almost like there's two different Americas and there's two different standards of justice being applied to these two different Americas. Please go ahead and wax eloquent on any of these things.
Well, Bob Knight, I've known him as a friend almost as long as I've known you, and he is absolutely spot on in what he says here. The sad thing about it is, until recently, we always thought the FBI was a respected and incorruptible institution. And now it's turned out that's not the case. And part of it, I think, has to do with we are getting away from the idea that there is such a thing as objective truth, an objective reality, and a higher law to which all human law must conform. We've come to the point where law is simply what the ones in power want to impose as law, and the truth is whatever people want to perceive it to be. If that's what the journalism schools are teaching, if that's what the criminology schools are teaching, that's what those who go into those fields are going to be teaching as well. And I guess it all just shows what we really need most is to get back to the truth of the Word of God, that God has spoken in His Word, that there is objective truth, and that justice, law and justice both, need to follow that objective truth. Now, we can have a Republican victory in the fall, and I'm all in favor of that, and another victory in 24, I'm all in favor of that, but ultimately, that's only treating symptoms. We really need to get to the root cause, which is a rejection of the Word of God and the truth that it proclaims.
Wow. Where is Elliot Ness when you need him? And by the way, Elliot Ness was Norwegian, and I know you're a Norwegian, and I'm married to a Norwegian. So, but since you wrote that...
Bada bra.
Yeah, exactly. Since you wrote that award-winning series of books on the history of law and the theological foundations of law, and we have about 2 minutes left. How about a comment about, well, in light of the fact that, you know, some people believe the truth is relative and that morality is relative, how did law manage to, you know, evolve, let me use a better word, develop in such a positive way in the Western world, at least, where, you know, there was such a high standard of justice at one time. So, in other words, in a world that believes that truth is relative, how do we turn around and say, well, there is such a thing as right and wrong?
Well, you go back to the old Anglo-Saxon law, as it was infused with Christianity, and when King Alfred developed his Anglo-Saxon code for England, he began it with a recitation of the Ten Commandments and other portions of biblical law, because that was the center of law. And it's only in the 1800s, as we started to get away from this with legal positivism, legal evolution, the evolving constitution, living constitution, and so on, that we've gotten away from that sort of thing. And I'm afraid the consequences are going to be that justice is a far cry from what in our hearts we know it needs to be.
Excellent. Okay, John Eidsmo, thank you so much. I'm going to go ahead and give your website again. It is morallaw.org, and you're involved with the Foundation for Moral Law as what, senior counsel, I believe, for that?
Maybe it's senior counsel, but I should tell people the website may still be temporarily down, but if it is, try it in a day or so. It'll be back up.
Historical and Theological Foundations of Law is the name of the series of your book. Thank you, John. Always a pleasure. All the best.
You too, Jerry. Great to talk with you.